Bryce, and you're listening to Against the Current, which is brought to you by CITR 101.9. CITR is a campus and community radio station based on UBC Vancouver's Point Grey campus. We're located on the unceded, ancestral, and traditional territories of the Musqueam people. Against the Current is a weekly news radio show that airs every Tuesday at 11:30 a.m., and we aim to bring you timely and relevant news coverage for the Metro Vancouver area every week. After the break, we'll be talking to the UBC Persian Club, and specifically their president, Ava Tabatabai, about their efforts to support the Iranian community in light of recent events.
The AMS Sexual Assault Support Centre, the SASC, is a free and confidential service which provides support to those who experience sexual assault, intimate partner violence, and harassment. We provide services to folks of all genders, including students, staff, faculty, and those who have a connection to the UBC Vancouver campus. We provide crisis and short-term emotional support, legal, medical, and campus-related advocacy, and outreach and educational programs. We are located in the Student Nest, room 3130. For more information on our hours of operation and other resources and services, please go to our website, amssasc.ca, or visit our Facebook page, AMS Sexual Assault Support Centre.
Awakened One, listen without distraction.
Listen to Breakfast with the Browns every Monday morning.
From 8 a.m. to 11 a.m.
Something that just offers you the place, the chance to stay in a mood.
Breakfast with the Browns.
The best in ambient, downtempo, electronic, ASMR, pop loungecore music. Totally Alpha Wave.
On CITR 101.9 FM.
Thus the most ordinary movement in the world may agitate a thousand odd disconnected fragments, now bright, now dim, hanging and bobbing and dipping and flaunting.
So, beauty remains in the impossibilities of the body.
You know that, don't you?
Wake up.
Welcome back, everyone. For our first segment today, we'll be talking to Ava about the UBC Persians Club's recent programming. So the first thing that I wanted to ask was, in light of recent events such as the passing of Mahsa Amini, how do you think these circumstances has affected the way that you operate the club and the relationship that you have with the Iranian community?
Thank you, first of all, for having me. I'm really looking forward to speaking about some of the things we've been doing to support our community and what our community has also been doing themselves. So in regards to your first question, our club has always been kind of a cultural club, like a place for a collection of students to find each other and make new friends. We have students of all sorts, so we have undergrads, grads, recent moves, like people who just came to Canada and people who grew up here. So we kind of have found ourselves within that same mandate, shifting over towards a different form of solidarity and connection between students. Whereas before we would have a lot of parties or get-togethers with games, now we have found ourselves being a voice and like a representative for Iranian students at UBC. So whether that means like holding events that they need for mourning or for solidarity with their brothers and sisters back home, or if that's doing advocacy in the university itself, speaking to professors, to the president of UBC, to different like deans and faculty members. Those are all things that we have found ourselves scrambling to figure out. And I think we have been trying our best and figuring it out along the way.
Mm-hmm. I've heard that one of the kind of initiatives that you've taken part of is an open letter with SFU. Can you tell me more about that?
Yeah, so our open letter with SFU comes after a few other open letters, so it might be helpful to go through kind of the trajectory of how we got there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so we started out with just a simple email template kind of letter to the AMS and to the faculty and dean of UBC. And in that letter, it was very basic. We were just trying to get the word out of what's going on. So explain that something is happening in Iran, there is unrest, that people are being affected, and that we have a few demands, such as leniency for students in their classes and things like that. And we sent that email template to members of the community who mass emailed, and we found that it was very successful. We actually got on the table, we were able to speak with different services at UBC. Even the president of the AMS reached out. So seeing that, we decided to continue this pattern of writing letters when every new event came up. Another one that we did.
Can you tell me a bit more about the demands that you mentioned, and also which services and student bodies you were able to talk to?
Yeah, so our first demands were very basic. So kind of we need leniency for students in their classes. Maybe it was, I think, around the ad drop deadline. So maybe extending that for students who are mentally, feeling a lot of burden and might not be able to focus on their classes. We also discussed having mental health services available by UBC and ones that are specifically available for Farsi speaking students, because a lot of students who are most affected are more comfortable speaking in Farsi rather than in English. And then I think we also covered wanting a statement by UBC. We found that those statements are so important to get the rest of the community at UBC who might not be aware, more aware. So we were reached out to by the president of the AMS, who said they would be working on some of the more technical aspects of like ad drop and things like that. UBC Counseling and UBC Student Life and UBC Health and Wellness also reached out to us. We were able to work with them for a few support sessions, events, like gathering resources. They answered a lot of our questions so that then we could go and answer questions that people had in our community. And we also did get a statement by President, by Santa Ana, so that was great.
Yeah, that's great. Were you successful in getting an extension for the ad drop deadline?
So instead of getting an extension, I guess what we got was a little bit more of a clear procedure for having academic concessions. So they just kind of clarified that. I think at that point, what we wanted more was recognition, because recognition is what kind of solidifies this as a legitimate concern for other professors, so that students can then take that, use it as a bit of leverage to speak to their professors when they need to about personal challenges they might have in getting, leniency on their deadlines and things like that.
And can you tell me more about the work that you've done with UBC Counseling and Health and Wellness Services? Were you able to get a Farsi speaking counselor on board and available to support Iranian students?
Yeah, so we voiced our concerns to them. They were very receptive to hearing what we had to say, kind of as representatives of the community. What we settled on was having a few support sessions with one English speaking counselor and one Farsi speaking counselor at UBC. Those seem to be quite popular. We're hoping to continue them. And then they also found counselors within the community who are Farsi speaking and willing to provide pro bono services. So they sent those over to us and we were able to get in contact with them. So at least we have a list. We're trying to actively talk to more.
And how would students who are interested in talking to these Farsi speaking community counselors be able to reach them? Would they contact the UBC Persian Club, or how would they get in contact?
Yeah, so right now I think the best way to do it, and I'm forgetting the exact name, but UBC does have a service, kind of like a life coaching service. That's not what it's called, but they have a phone service, you can do it anywhere, or you could be referred to do it in person through UBC Counseling, and they have created a list of Farsi-speaking counselors. So if students are looking for that, they should definitely look on their website. And we have put it on our own Instagram as well. So we have a list of resources that people can use if they want.
Okay, that sounds good. All right, can you tell me a bit more about how the open letters have progressed then?
Yeah, definitely. Getting back to the open letters. So the next thing that we kind of did was work with 10 other Persian clubs across Canada. And we signed this open letter after Sharif. So there was a bit of like a police siege of sorts at the university. A lot of students at UBC come from Sharif. There's a lot of, you know, it's a major concern for like the safety of the academic community. So as students, we felt it very deeply. And we released a letter with those universities, just kind of advocating for academic freedom. We found that it's quite a powerful move to have 10 different Persian clubs all across Canada signing onto the same letter, which is what inspired us to then work with SFU more deliberately. And we kind of categorized our demands in the SFU letter to focus on recognition, to focus on like mental health or support for the students who are here, and to also focus on the students who want to apply. There are many intelligent students back home who may be affected right now or may find themselves no longer able to pursue their academic goals in Iran given their political activism. So we're hoping to get, you know, extended deadlines or fee waivers for such students.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell me more about which universities you are able to work with and specifically what you mean and need in terms of academic freedom in this context?
Mm-hmm. So the universities, some of them that we worked with include University of Toronto, Iranian Association, the SFU Iranian Club. I think there were groups from like Concordia and a few other universities. I would actually have to pull up the letter to tell you the exact ones. But our goal was to show that this is a concern for the academic community and that we stand behind our students back home, almost like a solidarity statement to show that this is a concern that university officials should be looking at this here and should realize that, you know, academic freedom, when it's at stake in one country, it's at stake for the entire community.
Mm-hmm. And what exactly do you mean by academic freedom in this context, and how does that relate to the incident at Sharif University?
Yeah, so academic freedom, kind of that freedom to study freely without concern of, you know, being reprimanded or being constrained by certain laws, being able to speak freely. That's something that we take for granted in Canada, that we can have academic like conversations freely. And in many places, you have to be careful what you say because there are people watching. And Iran is one of those places. Another aspect is that when you have a regime that doesn't allow for general freedom and is sanctioned by the rest of the world, you cut off a large amount of scholars from free communication with the rest of the scholarship that's going on. So academic freedom in one country means that the entire world is enriched in its conversation. And that's something that we wanted to stand behind. And the incident of Sharif really shows that because, you know, over the course of history, it's been shown that student-led movements are often targeted because students are generally the young, passionate people in society. And so when you have government officials going into a university and locking it down and even shooting at students, you're showing that you really don't care for the academic community and that you're willing to sacrifice students' lives just to protect your own ideology.
Mm-hmm. And can you tell me more about any kind of concrete ways that the incident at Sharif University has affected students who used to go there or maybe are on exchange from there here in Canada?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the most obvious ways that such an incident would affect someone is through emotional distress. And it's not something really to take lightly. And I feel like we throw that word around a lot or that phrase. But really seeing students, a lot of members of the UBC Persian Club, even a few people on the exec team, did their bachelor degrees or master's degrees from there and are now doing continued studies here. And, you know, when they're getting reports from their friends that their friends have been shot or that their friends have been disappeared and they don't know where they are, you can just see that on a person's face, like how difficult it is. There's also an aspect of survivor's guilt where, you know, for some people, they were just there a year ago and now they're here, or they were just there, like, say, 6 months ago and they're just like starting their master's degree here. So I think reconciling the fact that that could have been you and that is your friends is a very difficult thing to try to understand. There's also another aspect where, you know, people's professors are either at risk of speaking out or they're unable to speak out. So that causes a whole nother layer of turmoil.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And so to talk about these kind of concerns, do you have like an ongoing relationship with these like Farsi speaking counselors and mental health services to support students who are experiencing that kind of emotional distress that you mentioned?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we found it really important to kind of approach this in two ways. So first is having that community, just being around other people and being able to speak really helps. A lot of people told us very early on when this started, like a month ago, that they just feel lonely because there's a lot of people here, a lot of their lab mates, if they're, you know, grad students, a lot of their classmates who just don't understand what's going on and don't understand what it's like to be in the middle of such a political and social like upheaval. So being around each other is a great way, which is why we opted for support sessions. But there's also that added layer of having people who know what they're talking about. So counselors come in and explain that different ways to kind of calm yourself down so that you can continue moving on with the things that you need to do and also help processing emotions that are going on. So we found that we need to have both. We're trying to continue that in our upcoming like programming in a way, to have sessions where students can just be around each other in different capacities, whether that's doing an activity or just discussing, and also having professionals there.
Mm-hmm. Right. And are these some of the things that you addressed in your open letter with SFU?
Yeah. So one of the sections that we thought is really important is that the universities, first of all, have open centers for dialogue. So SFU actually does have a center for dialogue. UBC does not. It doesn't have a designated place, which is some void that we've been trying to fill, but we think it would be amazing if the university could take that responsibility on itself. And then in addition to that, we are asking for mental health support. So for us, that would probably mean continuing our relationship with UBC counseling, having more support sessions, having more slide decks that we can provide to students who aren't able to make it. And for SFU, that would look like beginning some counseling services. So,
mm-hmm. And can you tell me more about the other demands that you've outlined in the letter? I know you mentioned things like tuition waivers and other forms of support. Can you elaborate on those demands?
Yeah, so one section that is quite important for us and we think was a bit unique in that letter, it's the first time we laid out those demands explicitly, was supporting students who want to apply. So that can look like different things. It can look like extending deadlines. We actually did speak to UBC undergrad admissions, and they mentioned that they're not able to extend the deadline, but they will be providing like this email where students under circumstances where, for example, internet is cut off or their funding can't go through because banking systems aren't working, they will be able to apply for an extension of the deadline and get it on a case-by-case basis. Obviously, it's not ideal. We would like for it to be one less step for the students who are trying to apply. But so far, we're trying to like take whatever we can get and spread that information so people are aware. Then it would also look like fee waivers. So as I just mentioned, a lot of people with, you know, the conversion rates are going up and down, or banking systems being unstable, it's quite a burden to try to give that fee waiver, that fee. So we're trying to get waivers at different departments. On the grad side, we would have to discuss more with graduate admissions, and we're trying to do that right now through different emails and such. Mm-hmm. Another thing would just be an acknowledgement by the university, like to understand that many students in Iran are able or may be blacklisted from continuing their studies. This is a bit of a more abstract demand because it's quite difficult to understand what exactly that would look like. But the fact that there are some students who have been politically active and for that reason are not allowed to get their degrees or are prevented from like having that official degree that they even completed. If the academic community as a whole can acknowledge that as a problem and come up with ways to address that, because you really are losing out on some incredibly intelligent people who have a lot to offer.
Mm-hmm. Can you also tell me more about your efforts to work with UBC's emergency aid services and financial aid services?
Yeah, so financial aid was a really big thing for us. From the beginning, we realized that people are having funding cut off because they just can't contact their families back home. So the first thing that we tried to do was the most immediate thing we could do, which was on our part as a club. We secured a grant from the AUS, $1,000, and we raised some donations. And we were able to provide these really small micro grants of like $50 to $100 just to alleviate like initial burden. Like say someone needs to buy groceries that day. We don't want them to make the decision between groceries and like paying tuition. But obviously that doesn't go very far. So when we were able to speak to UBC, they gave us a list of resources and they said that they would put their financial emergency aid service as kind of priority for Iranian students, which is amazing. And students can go use their website, speak to someone at UBC Emergency Aid, and they can assess what kind of aid they need. So whether that's paying rent, paying tuition, buying food or books, all of those can be covered.
Mm-hmm. And by AUS, you meant the Arts Undergraduate Society or? Yeah. Okay, cool. And are you still providing that kind of support or have you exhausted the funding that you've received from the AUS?
So we have a little bit left, so we're going to continue that and close it when it stops. But we do have kind of another like aspect to our funding, which is kind of a freedom of expression fund. That's kind of how we called it. So from the very beginning, we got requests from people saying that, you know, we are able to help, we are able to be active, we can print posters, design posters, you know. We painted the, like that engineering E, all of that requires buying supplies. And they said that we have the manpower, we just need the funds. So we've also been providing funds for that. And right now we're in talks with the Science Undergraduate Society and the Commerce Undergraduate Society, I think, and SODR, to get different grants. We're continuing to raise donations, continuing to get donations from faculty members. We really hope to continue providing those kind of grants. So allowing people to really use the freedom of speech that we do have in Canada and relieving any obstacles, especially funding related, that might be in the way.
Mm-hmm. And can you tell me more about your relationships with different professors and departments at UBC?
Yeah, so some departments have been a little more receptive, some less receptive. Honestly, it comes down to how many Persian students they have. A lot of the grad departments, particularly the engineering ones, have been very understanding from what I've heard. They've been able to provide, you know, extensions or leniency if people need it. We're trying to work with more departments in the Faculty of Arts, so there are generally less Iranian students there, which means we have to do more advocacy to get the point across. And I'm personally an art student as well. So I got some pushback from professors at the beginning when, you know, I was honestly too busy to even realize that I had to do schoolwork, you know, trying to process everything that's going on and also plan a bunch of events. Right now, what we're planning on doing is to write kind of a letter explaining the situation to professors and then send them to professors that we know are quite friendly and have them give it to their deans. And this is the result of a discussion we had at our roundtable. So we had a roundtable discussion I think last week, and we invited a bunch of faculty members, and a good number came. I think 10 or 15 people from faculty came, and they gave different ideas, and one of them was to understand that every individual faculty member might not know what's going on. Even if they do know the situation, they might not know the procedure. So to have a head of department tell them that this is an active, ongoing situation, that it's worth understanding and that students need leniency and here's what you can do about it, will create kind of cohesion and make relieve the burden of the student to try to advocate for themselves when really they're going through so much that it's very difficult to do so. Some of the things that we would ask is like extension on deadlines, also having heads of department who do have quite a bit of sway, lobby UBC in some ways for like fee waivers, you know, extensions, especially those who are accepting grad students directly. And just having compassion. So for professors to understand that that's happening and even mention it in their classes so that we can raise awareness, things like that.
Mm-hmm. And can you tell me more about previous roundtable discussions and dialogue that you've held and any key insights that you've been able to glean from them?
Yeah, so we had two discussions. One was focused more on community building and the emotional aspect. So it was an experience-centered discussion with UBC Equity Inclusion and the Iranian Professional Network. That was really great. I think I saw that a lot of people had so much to say, so many experiences that are, you know, quite traumatic. And having them share that kind of gave legitimacy to their experiences, because a lot of people could agree or have felt similar things. So I think just talking it out, having people there, you know, it's okay to cry, like that was really important. Another thing that we did, or another roundtable, was action focused. So that was kind of just UBCPC. We invited a bunch of professors, we had students, we had members from the community, people who work jobs in Vancouver and were interested in coming. And we had so many amazing suggestions. There were some suggestions from faculty. So one of them would have been the writing a letter to the heads of department. There were suggestions of different discussions we can hold. So, you know, varying the language, that was an English focus. Both discussions were English focused, so maybe having some that are Farsi centered so some people can express themselves in different ways. There were ideas by members of the community to say someone has a skill, for example, that they know how to have certain VPNs to bypass internet restrictions. Those people can either write up some quick instructions, make a video, whatever that is. And as a club, we can help spread that video. So use our platform to like give resources to anyone who needs it. There were also suggestions to try to, you know, set up NGOs, or some people came in and they're like app developers and they wanted our help to, you know, add lessons to like their educational app, so students in Iran who might not be comfortable going to school would be able to access educational material on the internet. So we had all sorts of wonderful suggestions, other clubs we can collaborate, things like that.
Okay. So before we wrap up, we're going to take a short break, but afterwards I'd love to hear more about just upcoming programming and also the different ways that you've collaborated with the larger community outside of UBC. So I'll be looking forward to that.
You know what I could go for right now? Authentic flour tortillas pan-fried until golden brown.
Yum!
Or vegan taco kits filled with traditional Mexican chilies and spices.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Or how about vegan potato and chorizo taquitos?
How can I get these foods immediately?
Buy Lita's Mexican Foods.
Sounds delicious. Tell me more.
Lita's Mexican Foods is a female-managed, plant-based Mexican food innovator in BC. Their products come prepackaged and frozen at tons of local grocery stores around Metro Vancouver. Not to mention they can be cooked in under 10 minutes.
Wow, that sounds perfect for me. I've been so busy lately and dinner takes so long to make. Where can I get my hands on some Lita's Mexican Foods?
lots of places. Whole Foods, Choices, Stong's, Vegan Supply, Donald's, and even UBC Bookstore. Hey, where are you going?
To buy some Lita's Mexican foods. See you later.
See ya.
Slice of Life Art and Gift Shop is Vancouver's choicest destination for one-of-a-kind artist-made prints, posters, screen prints, riso prints, paintings, acrylic paintings, watercolor paintings, ceramic mugs, ceramic plates, ceramic bowls, ceramic pots, lapel pins, hats, toques, crochet bathing suits, jewelry, trinkets, knickknacks, hand-painted signs, curated thrift, and a bunch more stuff that won't fit in this designated block of airtime. Slice of Life Art and Gift Shop, located at 1636 Venables, just off Commercial. Open 11 to 6, 6 days a week.
Okay, and we're back. So I wanted to learn a little bit more about the ways that you might have collaborated with the community outside of UBC, and also your connection or viewpoint on the different protests that we've been having over the last couple months.
So I think one of the most amazing things to come out of this, which is kind of a weird thing to say, but I guess everything has some sort of a silver lining to it, is that we were able to really collaborate with the outside community. So whether that includes grad students, students of different universities, just members of the community who work at UV or work in Vancouver and, you know, saw that there's a active Persian club, is that we were able to really support them in their endeavors. So one thing that we felt very strongly as a club, related to kind of our mandate of being a place for gathering and for cultural, you know, expression, is that we can be a safe space. We have some resources. We can do bookings at UBC, for example, but we can't necessarily express what people need to express. They need to be able to do that themselves. So we had a couple of protests that we worked with members of the community for. The first one was after Sharif. We kind of had a few phases to that. So first was printing, where we use kind of those grants to supply printing materials, or we just made a bunch of flyers and printed them up ourselves. And we stood in front of the bookstore with signs and handed them out. And then the next day we had quite a large protest. I think, I'm not sure exactly how many people came, but it was a couple hundred. And we were able to kind of march and sing, you know, the important songs that are going around right now, and focused our march on both Farsi and English, like, chants, so that people within the UBC community would be able to see that. So kind of our solidarity for academic freedom and students back home. And that was really led by community members, and all we did was really just support them. You know, we secured security at UBC, or we did some bookings. But other than that, we wanted members of the community to be there to express how they needed to express. The second protest that we had was actually in collaboration with Afghan students at UBC, and it was kind of a university worldwide thing. So this Instagram account called Middle East Matters had this idea for a global day of protests, and we registered for that as a club. And then members of the community again came and they helped us. And we were able to have quite a good protest where we stood for students' rights all across the world. So Afghan students, Iranian students, whatever that may be. And for that one, we had some professors come out and they were able to see what we're doing. And we got some support in that sense. Afterwards, we had professors reaching out to us. So we found that the protests have been quite successful and a really great way to not only let people here express themselves, like sometimes you just need to yell it out, but also to grab attention from others.
Mm-hmm. And are you planning any upcoming protests?
Yeah, so we're not planning any protests per se, because we've kind of had this idea to shift our focus to teach-ins. And this is actually a recommendation from a professor in the Department of Anthropology at UBC. And what our vision is for teach-ins or sit-ins is kind of like a bi-weekly, maybe, you know, every 3 weeks type thing where we invite speakers, whether they're academics or activists or, you know, performers, it can be artistic, to have them come and talk to the different issues that are really at play in this unrest. So whether that's feminism, kind of minority indigenous type rights, environmental justice, animal justice, there's a whole list of things that are really being involved, different kinds of basic human rights, that we can have speakers come and add not only an academic twist to it, but a really nuanced take. The protests downtown are amazing. It's so wonderful to see that many people come out every week in solidarity with people back home. But I think as a university and as a student club, we're able to provide another perspective or another voice onto it. So we hope to do that, kind of garner visibility through our speakers, and also provide room for discussion. So that's kind of where we're going as a club. And we hope to have those starting, not next week, but the week after.
Mm-hmm. And with those presentations and talks be open to the UBC community or just the larger community in general?
Larger community. So we hope to open as much as we can. Obviously, it'll probably be more students because it's, you know, in the middle of the school day. But at this point, we don't really want to discriminate against students or non-students. I think everyone really needs a place. And if we have the resources and the sway to do so, we should provide that space for people.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any other upcoming programming that you'd like to talk about?
Yeah, so actually this week what we're doing is we have made a lot of stickers and pins. So like just they say different things like Free Iran or Zen Zendiga Azadi, so Women, Life, Freedom. And we will be having those available for anyone who wants them. They're by donation, so if you can't pay, no worries. If you can, then that would be amazing, so we can just make more. And that will be held in the Nest, so we have it Tuesday, which is today, from 11 to 3 p.m and then Friday from 11 to 3 as well. If we find that there's high demand for those, which so far at some of our events we have seen demand for it, we are hoping to extend that into future weeks.
Mm-hmm. And can you tell me more about the Woman, Life, Freedom movement and the ways that you've kind of participated and enacted that at the UBC Persia Club?
Yeah, so I think the Woman, Life movement is kind of a great way to summarize a very complex movement that's taking place in Iran right now, which is a demand for feminism in the sense of equal rights for all. You know, limiting restrictions on women's bodies and women's autonomy. But that also goes to limiting restrictions on people's freedom and autonomy and freedom of speech and expression as a whole. So we've really been trying to support that through our activism at UBC, providing a space for not only women to come and speak, but also for members of the community to come and express themselves in a way that's not so possible back home and that we hope will be possible soon. So whether that means protesting in solidarity, having letters, passing out flyers, educating the rest of the world on this topic, getting as many eyes as we can. So in a society like Canada, where a lot of rights and freedoms of expression and equality for women is taken for granted, it's great to have those eyes on a place where that's not. So the scrutiny is quite important, I think.
Mm-hmm. And is there any other events or anything else that you'd like to talk about and discuss before we wrap up?
Yeah, so some of the things that we're hoping to do and that we'd love more feedback and help from the community is one, to send the letters to the professors and get it to the heads of department. Two is to continue advocating for admissions extensions for students who are applying this cycle. And then we also are hoping to get some funding or more scholarships secured for students who are applying. So after the flight happened, like the flight was shot down a couple of years ago, UBC did set up a scholarship fund. We hope that they could continue that and add more to it. And finally, we're hoping to do different kinds of events for gatherings. So whether that's an art event where people can come together and make posters, or just places for people to come and talk. I think at this point, we need to maintain our solidarity as a community and support each other so that we can continue supporting the people we need to.
Mm-hmm. And can you tell me a bit more about the scholarship that you mentioned that UBC set up and how students can access that?
Yeah, so the PS, I forgot the flight number, the flight that happened in 2020, it was shot down. There were a few students at UBC, many Canadians that was coming to Canada, so at U of T and things like that, who are impacted directly. UBC took that as an opportunity to set up a fund, a scholarship fund. And we have been talking to them to extend that fund, add more to it. What U of T actually did was to set up a scholarship fund where they will match any donations that are given. So the university will match. We would love if UBC can do a similar thing and just provide that funding for students who may have that as a barrier to applying to the university.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is there anything else like that you think might be important to acknowledge?
I think overall the main thing I can acknowledge is that the community is so strong and that we are really thankful to be representatives in some sense of this community. One thing that I've really seen more now is that the power of like Telegram groups, people coming together and speaking about ways they can be active. And there are so many people who are willing to put so much time and effort. So what we really hope we can do as a club is to support those people and be a safe space for people to come and express themselves and not only feel the emotions that come with such a major life event, but also have the energy they need to continue working towards the liberation of their friends and family back home.
Okay, well, thank you so much for joining us here today on Against the Current. And I appreciate all the time that you've taken to talk about the UBC Persian Club and the different ways that you're trying to support both the UBC community and the community at large. I hope our listeners today have been able to learn something and hopefully consider the different ways that they might be able to access the support that the UBC Persian Club is trying to provide. That's basically it for our show today, folks. If you weren't able to catch the full episode, we are doing rebroadcasts of every episode every Saturday at noon. And our next episode will be airing next Tuesday, so November 8th at 11:30 a.m. So feel free to tune in or to go to our website page at, I believe, citr.ca/against the current. And I hope to see you next week. Thank you for listening.
Hey, I'm Sarah from Alien Boys, and you are listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
down, working out a face for the front. But I've been keeping up, aiming for the sake of being saved from the rut. So
it's all to make the mark. Hi there. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from UBC Vancouver campus located on the unceded ancestral and traditional lands of the Hunkaminim-speaking Musqueam people. We honor the ancestral and ongoing care for this land by the host nations. Media practices are often rooted in white gaze, and we recognize that it is our responsibility to shift our approach and move towards radical empathy. While we broadcast from UBC Vancouver campus, our listenership extends to the unceded lands of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh nations and beyond. We encourage you to check out native-land.ca, that is, native-land.ca, to learn more about whose land and territory you live and work on or may be visiting. Thank you.